How is my favorite bartender?
Disappointed. Did you know? Organic Pop-Tarts are in no way, and I mean no way, good for you. That's disappointing.
You might have known that from the fact that they were organic Pop-Tarts, so you knew they were lying from the start, because one of those words doesn't work.
Correct, because there's 30 grams of sugar in one half of one.
But it's organic sugar.
Yes, you understand. You understand. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I think I need a beverage.
What can I get for you?
What do you got that's good today?
I'd avoid anything with a pineapple. They're playing Super Bowl in the back, and it's a tropical crime scene over there.
I'll just take a beer, thanks.
You got it. You here to meet someone today?
Indeed I am. They should be showing up any moment now.
Hold on one second. Let me take care of the person down at the other end. Hey, how you doing? What's it going to be today? Who? The guy at the end of the bar? That's David. Or everyone just calls him D. Fish. He's an all-purpose business talker. From speaking to training to writing books to podcasting, he's always talking to somebody or other about business or beer or what they're listening to on their headphones. You never know which way it's going to go, but it's always interesting. In fact, why don't you go over there and join them?
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of the Beer, Beats, and Business Podcast. I'm glad that you could join us for another round of interesting conversations with interesting people. Today, I get to chat with Corey Northcutt. He has successfully founded or co-founded three different businesses in three different industries. Right now, he runs a 15-person inbound marketing agency called Northcutt. Here's a bit of our conversation.
Man, I don't know. Go outside. Go for a walk. Stop looking at a computer.
I was excited to have Corey on the show because we actually have these kinds of conversations at an actual bar, and he's always got great insights, and I knew that you'd appreciate them as well. My name is David J.P. Fisher, but everyone just calls me D. Fish. I'm a speaker, author, and business coach, and today I get to do one of my most fun jobs, be your host on the B3 Podcast. So let's do it. Hello, Corey. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, D-Fish?
As always, living the dream. Super excited to have you on with us today.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
This season, we are talking all about connection and how the new world of connectivity is changing, how it's helping or hindering, or really just all around changing how we live our lives and especially how we do our business with each other. So my first question to you today is, how has the world of hyperconnectivity impacted how you do business?
Yeah, man, there's two ways, really. The first is that it made it feasible for me to even have a company. Because this, I guess what I do now, it's a digital marketing agency, right? And it was an accident.
Okay. You just walking down the street, it tripped and boom, you had a company?
More than you know, yeah. So I have an IT background. I'm not a marketer originally. And my first company was an IT company.
Okay.
I did all the marketing, sure. Like I was the one elected to go talk to people when no one else wanted to do that. But when all that kind of melted down, I was just approached by people right away that were my old competitors. Pretty much my first and second degree contacts on LinkedIn became a client roster pretty much overnight.
Wow. Okay.
It, I guess, unfolded over the course of maybe a year. So overnight might be a little disingenuous, but it was fast.
Sure.
And I feel like looking back even 10 years ago, if my job title changes, no one knows, right? Like, it's amazing how quickly that kind of unfolded for me. And ever since then, I guess the second way, my company is completely remote. And I am completely a believer now. My first company wasn't. We had an office and it was something I will never go back and do again. But again, I don't think that would have been possible without the connectivity that you mentioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we have the ability now to do everything remotely. If I want to pull in a partner and have them talk to a client, we just all get on a Google Hangout and we do it, right? We have the face-to-face interaction as much as we possibly can, short of actually being in a room together. And it works really well for us.
Wow. Okay. So there's a ton of questions I now have.
Sure.
So, well, I want to talk about that second point you made first, the idea that you're a completely remote company. So you guys don't have an office at all right now?
We don't. We tried doing the WeWork thing. Like, we got a free, like, I think 5 or 10 person thing for a month, and none of my staff showed up. We had one person that was just all about it. And, you know, we got everyone together for a few days, but no, we're really completely remote.
I'm curious. So the ton of advantages, right, to being fully remote. It's more convenient for people. It's easier. They can work kind of on their own schedule, so to speak. You can hire people wherever, I guess, which is pretty cool. So you can always go to where the talent is versus saying, hey, we need somebody within X number of miles from our office. How have you managed the ability for people to build relationships if they're not seeing each other? And I shouldn't even say seeing, because yeah, there's video chat and stuff, but actually like being in people's presence.
Sure.
Like, or do you have a way to make that happen?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I read something a long time ago. It was a poll of all the different reasons people leave jobs and what makes them dislike their workplace. And the number one thing was interference in their personal life, right? So mm-hmm. I guess first and foremost, I don't want to impose anything that way if I can avoid it, which is needlessly sitting in a room. But as far as building a culture with these people, when you don't have that, it is a challenge for sure. And while I can hire people that are everywhere, most of my staff actually are right here in Chicago.
Okay.
So at least once a month, we're able to do this thing where we all get together for a drink. That's fine. You don't have everyone fighting over who didn't clean the coffee maker in the mornings. But when they want it, they can have it, basically. I've got other staff that just kind of haphazardly will say, well, let's go get together. We'll co-work just this afternoon, this coffee shop. We'll make plans, and then it'll be more of a treat than just, I don't want to go to another meeting today if I don't need it, if it's not helping me, right?
Right.
So it's optional, basically. And what I found is that people do take advantage when they want to, when they have that.
Gotcha. So it's not like you're forcing them to do it.
Right.
But kind of letting them pull themselves into those opportunities for interpersonal exchange, so to speak.
Yep.
Cool. Now, when you're working, like doing your client work, do you find, are your people working together on client projects, or is it mostly kind of like a one-to-one thing? I guess the question I'm kind of curious about is, do you find that your people do as good of work if they have to work together by being remote? Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And I really do. But it does present one challenge, which is, while I think this way, our clients don't necessarily think this way too, right?
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And I think the biggest advantage is right there for my staff because, yeah, people want that. Occasionally they don't. Sometimes that they just, I want to be in an office with people, but more often they do. The flip side is I found with clients, a lot of people are just, what they always say to me is exactly the same thing, actually. It's that we're just very old school. We want to sit down. We want you to present. We want to do the PowerPoint thing. And I guess the first thing that comes to mind is, well, that's not really the kind of culture that we have or the kind of what I even want to be doing.
So right.
Maybe it's just not a great fit to begin with. But we will sacrifice some business for this. I think we still do good work. We assign one point person who's able to kind of guide everything. And they've got a crew that we call them squads. They're like little miniature marketing departments. So if you want to talk to your social media person, you can. But you have your strategist, who's your main person who's getting their hands dirty, that will actually be the person you talk to most days. And that's fine. You know, you can set a weekly, 15-minute video chat with them. Or you can really do whatever you want. Some people don't even want that. Some people say, well, we use Basecamp here. So I'll put a little thing in Basecamp. We get a reminder. We'll run through all of our ideas this week and then we move on. And that seems to work pretty well.
Very cool. I'm reading a book called Humans Are Underrated. And actually I finished it recently, and it's interesting what you're sharing with me, because what the author, I'm really bad with authors of books. I just like go, oh, that's a great title. And then I read it and I totally forget who actually like wrote it, which makes it really hard to go back and reference later.
Yeah. I've got this this Networking in the 21st Century book I've been reading.
No, that author is, he is very good looking author. No, it's Jeff, I think it's Jeff Colvin or something like that. But it was really fascinating because his whole thesis in the book is that humans moving forward with work, they're going to be best served doing things which humans are good at that machines aren't.
Sure.
Which sounds like it makes sense, but his whole point was that for the last century, we've been trying to do machine work better than machines, and now they're just, you know, catching back up. But the point he makes is that humans are really good at empathy, kind of that engagement, that interaction, that in the moment reaction to how somebody else is acting, thinking, or feeling. He uses the example of, I don't even know what you call it, parole, basically like parole decisions, like should somebody get paroled or not. And what they found is that a computer algorithm will actually do a better job of deciding if somebody's going to be a recidivist or not. Uh-huh. But people are terrified of the idea of just having a computer decide if a dangerous criminal should be let out.
Sure.
They want to have a person that the point of contact in their brain. So it's interesting. It kind of sounds like that's happening with some of your potential clients going, yeah, that's all well and good, but we want to have like a name and a face that we can like call up and say, hey, why did this not work?
Yeah. And that's, man, I'm not sure how I feel about like the whole empathy thing too, because I can see applications where, yeah, right now that makes sense. And I wonder how far we'll go to where, like, is a machine better? If it does make that decision better, do we reach a point where people just finally flip and say, okay, I don't want a human deciding who goes free, right?
Right.
Maybe it's more acceptance over time. Maybe 10 or 15 years from now, that's not the case.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I kind of find myself falling on the side of knowing that a computer algorithm isn't always going to be best, right? Because it's only going to be make the best decision based on the input, right, that we give it. Mm-hmm. The same author made the point that human beings are actually sometimes better at solving problems because we keep changing what the problems are.
Sure.
And deciding what's important or not important.
Yep.
But like, I just kind of think of even an algorithm would be better at diagnosing your illness. Like let's say a terminal illness, like a cancer. Would you want to still not have a human doctor there to engage with? And I think we still do, right? I mean, maybe not everybody, but I'd want the computer to be able to do some of the diagnosing. But if I just got a printout that said, hey, you've got terminal cancer, you know, the percentage chance that you're dead within 3 months is 83.2%, that would freak me out.
Yeah, I can see that. Kind of this is actually, we haven't spoken about this at all, I think, before right now. This is a really deep rabbit hole that has nothing to do with like anything I think you or I do directly, but
welcome to Beer Beats and Business. Call it the rabbit hole, right?
Yeah, I love it. Because I'm a big believer in AI, you know, like I'm an IT person. And I mean, back in school, I almost got a psychology minor just because I really am a believer that just about everything gets replaced by something sooner or later, right? And now, as I've done the job that I'm in now, you made a really good point there, that how much of my daily work and your daily work is just being a therapist now.
Right. Yep.
I think there's that old analogy, like that's why people hire lawyers, right? It's not that, and don't get me wrong, I think law is a completely legitimate trade, but
sure.
I think most conversations are people wanting to feel better. It's like, I already read what this contract says, but I want that assurance, right? That I'm really doing the right thing.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly it. So it's interesting you say that, because again, I'm going to go back to this, humans are underrated. And he actually talks about the law and how a lot of like highly successful lawyers moving forward aren't going to be the ones that are good at the law, mm-hmm. right? Because you can get a computer program that can search case law faster and get all the appropriate citations and references faster and better.
Right.
But I think of a divorce lawyer or a criminal injury lawyer, most of what their job is to be a therapist, right? Or to, and maybe being a therapist is too extreme, but it's their job is to interact with the client.
Sure.
Hey, you just made me think of Office Space, right? The one guy, like, what do you do? I'm the liaison. I have people skills.
Yep. So that's the world we're moving towards, you're saying, is it's just that guy that's going to be the one still working in that office.
I think so. Maybe not that guy because he wasn't very good at it. But if you think about it, right. I mean, what did the consultants do in Office Space? They were basically going and figuring out that there was no reason to hire somebody to do a TPS report when the computer could do it better and faster and, you know, probably in 3 minutes and not waste all the time and energy and, you know, create human suffering.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's get rid of all of these people. I think we're seeing that. And I wanted to go back to, you mentioned LinkedIn and, you know, LinkedIn's always something that's fascinating to me, of course. What was it like to have a platform where you had on LinkedIn, you said that it happened overnight, even if it happened in a year, starting a new business in a year and really having it up and running, that's actually really fast compared to 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, you'd build a business plan, you'd go get funding, it would be a huge production.
Yeah. What was it like did you have to do anything different to actually leverage that online network? Or was it just kind of, hey, I'm doing something different and boom, people are coming to you saying, hey, can we hire you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I didn't do much, but I did a little bit. I think the first thing was I had never really needed to leverage my LinkedIn before this whole transition. So I just asked a couple people for recommendations. I think that drew a little bit of attention right away.
Okay.
Then, you know, through word of mouth, a lot of things happen. I credit the fact that anything that I talk about, other people understand within at least like the web hosting sphere, which is what my first company very specifically did. So if I said, wow, you know, look at what this web hosting company is doing with their marketing, other web hosts kind of perk up and they say, okay, well, you know, I think LinkedIn list, I've got probably most web hosting business owners, and there's a lot of them, at least beyond a certain scale. And it didn't take too much more than me just doing a few different, you know, teardowns and saying, wow, this is really, you know, an awful situation. Look at, say, like this Fortune 500 who has 500 people in their marketing department, but they're not even in the top 100 pages of Google for all these different things for whatever reason. And it didn't take too much more than me just kind of poking fun at things like that that I enjoy doing anyways.
All right.
For people to say, oh yeah, I see what you're doing now. You know, maybe we can talk about that because I really need somebody in my organization that, you know, can write press releases that aren't going to embarrass us and, you know, run our social media feed while still, you know, understanding what developer libraries are and Linux kernels and that kind of thing. So it just kind of came from there.
Interesting. As you're telling me that story, even though you might not realize it, you were making these very interesting connections between different worlds, right? Mm-hmm. Between the technology and marketing and communication and SEO. And it's interesting because I think that is something that, going back to what we were talking about earlier, humans are really good at. Empathy and also just seeing really disparate elements and bridging them and connecting them. I guess we're talking about LinkedIn specifically, but really kind of any online platform, it really gave you a platform that let you speak to an audience, not solely online, because you even just mentioned word of mouth, and word of mouth is also a very person-to-person offline concept, but you were able to kind of piggyback back and forth. Is that right?
Yeah, it's actually a really interesting analogy you just made me think of there. Somebody wrote a big thing on Elon Musk a while back, and I'm not going to compare myself to Elon Musk by any stretch of the imagination.
You're much better looking. You're much better looking.
Yeah, you think so?
Sure. I mean, he might have a couple extra dollars than you, but you know, and he has a spaceship. But other than that, you're totally the same.
This is basically radio. You can tell people that; they'll believe it.
Corey looks like a combination of Brad Pitt and George Clooney.
So, perfect.
Yeah.
But it all boiled down to the fact that Elon Musk like often gets pegged as a jack of all trades. And what they kind of boiled it down to, like, well, he's really tried to be a master of all trades, right? Like he founded PayPal, he got great at programming. Tesla, you know, that's electrical engineering, now aerospace with SpaceX. These aren't related fields at all.
Right.
I've kind of gone through the same thing with my transitions here, and it really opened up an interesting opportunity for me to do that. I think for exactly the reason that you mentioned there is that these fields often aren't bridged, right? And they mm-hmm. do still matter to one another in different ways. And that opens up little pockets in the market that no one's really thought about. Like when I do an SEO audit, like we can get really in depth with technical stuff because I understand how Apache works. Like I know almost no SEO firms that actually look at your web server headers like in detail.
Interesting. Yeah.
And it's little quirks like that. It's like, yeah, it's probably not going to matter that much in like 9 cases out of 10, but it just kind of gives a competitive advantage that where there may not have been one.
I think that's a very astute observation. I think of even my success in my career, and really a lot of the people that I know, the very successful ones, are able to, as you said, kind of bridge what are seemingly disparate areas and kind of find the commonalities between the two. And yeah, that's like becomes your differentiator, right? Your the little value proposition that you can bring that other people can't. So I like that. That's an interesting observation. And you know what? It's also a great observation for us to pause on. I want everybody to know that they are listening to Beer, Beats, and Business. I am your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone just calls me D. Fish. Thank you so much for spending a little time with us. If you want to reach out to me, you can find me online. Twitter is the easiest place, D. Fish Rockstar. You can also find us online at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. Great place to subscribe. And of course, your ratings and reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, or any of the other platforms that you use to listen to us would be greatly appreciated. My guest today is my friend Corey Northcutt. He has successfully founded or co-founded 3 different businesses in 3 different industries. Currently, he runs a 15-person inbound marketing agency called Northcutt. Corey, what's the best way for people to reach out and get in touch with you if they want to talk more?
They could go to northcutt.com with 2 T's on the end. I can also find me on Twitter. It's just Corey with an E_Northcutt.
Awesome. All right. So go find Corey, chat more about SEO Apache headers. I have no idea what any of that meant, which means it must be pretty deep down. Dude, let's talk about beer. So
yes.
I know that you're also a fan. You like a lot of darks. You and I actually first met at the Long Room in Chicago, Illinois, one of our monthly get-togethers. Right now, I think you were saying that your favorite brewery is Off Color. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. You can usually just count on it to be the right amount of weird. I guess it's right there in the name, but they make some interesting beers.
So what does that mean, the right amount of weird? Because I actually have never had an off-color beer, so you're teaching me stuff.
Oh, no. Yeah. They're just slightly different. There's just something about them. I can't quite put my finger on it, just like an extra flavor note.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just the one bit of commonality that maybe like some beer snob is going to say he's totally wrong. That's not the case at all. But to me, they just seem a little different.
That's cool. We are the beer snobs of our own worlds. That's all that matters. are they based out of Chicago? Where are they from?
They are. They actually just opened a tap room down not too far from Goose Island. I think actually on the actual Goose Island.
I smell field trip.
Yep.
Very cool. Is there any particular ones that you like the most that I should start with, or just kind of dive into anything?
Yeah, so I'll plug their Yuzu Fierce. It's pretty tasty. It's a Berliner Weisse. It's kind of a sour. It's pretty tasty. We've actually a former staff member of ours got hired on as their marketing manager here, and we got the whole crew together. Give him a hard time at our monthly happy hour after that. And that was the one that, coming straight from the brewery, that he told us that we should drink. I'm sure I'll send this to him and he'll tell me why I'm wrong about beer here. But it's pretty tasty.
That's awesome. And tell him that if he wants any plugs or on-air mentions, I can completely be bought with beer. I am completely bribable. I will take payola, no problem whatsoever.
I'll let him know.
Cool. Okay. So off color. So get that on the list if you're listening. Do you know if they distribute outside of Chicago, or are they still pretty much local?
I think they're still pretty local. I'm only beginning to see them like everywhere. That usually there'll be like one off color on tap in Chicago, but I've never seen them outside the city.
Gotcha. So if you're listening to us outside of Chicago, this is a great excuse to go to your high end craft beer store. There's going to be one in your area that imports all the crazy stuff, and ask them to get you some off color, or come visit us in Chicago. We got a lot of great craft breweries, that's for sure. All right, music. I'm pretty excited because I was asking, you know, what's the music that's kind of resonating with you right now? What are you digging? And you said Emancipator. I'm getting old, apparently.
What
is Emancipator? Teach me.
We're both old, first of all.
I'd like to say we're seasoned, right? We're seasoned.
Yeah, we're seasoned, and we both played music, right?
Yeah.
We've had our talks. We've got our ska lists. all the old indie rock bands that we listen to.
Absolutely.
But as time goes on, I like some sort of ambient music playing all day long while I do things. It just kind of puts me in a mindset. I'm going to write something. I'm going to code something. I'm seriously like 10 hours a day of just that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And what I usually do with that is just put on Spotify, do a Discover Weekly, do Pandora. And this is just kind of one of those groups that I think I just discovered that way like 5 years ago. And you mentioned what I've been listening to. So this one is, I think it's a producer and a guy that works with him that plays a whole bunch of acoustic instruments, some really unusual, like Eastern instruments, usually stringed, some drums. But the best way I've heard it described is just really pretty acoustic music with sick beats. So... It'll be just like this nice kind of ambient string music, and then there's a break beat behind it. It's like, yeah, this is nice.
Oh, I love. Okay,
it's a little bit of everything.
I'm in. I love it. I actually do the same thing. I spend a lot of time listening to instrumental, as you said, ambient music. Sure. But I need to have a beat. If it's just my wife listens to kind of more of the flowy orchestral, you know, nature stuff, and it just puts me to sleep. But there's I listen to on YouTube a lot. I just search jazz hop, and you'll get like these two hour long kind of mixes of just the right amount of chill, but it's got that good beat to it. And this is just another place I could then plug. Do you know Nujabes?
I don't.
Nujabes is, I will gladly talk about him on every episode because I love him. Unfortunately, RIP, he no longer with us, but he was a Japanese producer who just made beautiful hip hop. That's the only way I could say it. Beautiful hip hop, amazing beats. And I could just listen to stuff for hours on loop. In fact, if you go on YouTube, and I'm sure there's other artists that have done this or that have had this done to their music, people will take a 20 second cut of one of his songs and just loop it for an hour. And they call it like a homework mix or, you know, work mix. Mm-hmm. And just earlier today, I was listening to one of them because I was like, I couldn't listen to just one thing, you know, for an hour. Nope. Totally did. Just it zoned out. It was awesome. Got a bunch of writing done. So
nice.
I love it. All right. So Emancipator, is there any special ones that I should check out first or just search for and whatever comes up is good?
Well, the album that hooked me was Soon It Will Be Cold Enough to Build Fires. It's cold out. So. It works.
Very fitting. Awesome. And hey, if you had to go plug a song into your iPod or whatever device you use right now, what's something else you'd listen to?
Oh, man. I'm all over the place, man. So that would be some good chill music. I've also been a big fan of, I'm actually looking it up right here. I know I've got it. Joe Driscoll has this album with Seku Kuyate. I'm probably not pronouncing that right at all.
I don't know, because I don't know who these people are. So
I don't know either. It's Spotify's amazing. It's just like, this used to be a big point of pride for me to have all these weird artists that when I was younger, it's like, you've heard of nobody that I listen to. Like I was hipster before hipstering was cool.
Right, right.
Which is what I'll tell a hipster if I come across him. but now it's all Spotify, and this was just another one. Tamala, the song that they let out. It's really cool. He plays, I think it's an African harp with
like
guitar, and it's got this really just a really unique sound to it. I'm a sucker for any type of weird string instrument. If you're not getting that yet,
I'm picking up that vibe.
Yep.
Well, and it's interesting because if we want to take this conversation full circle, 360, get meta, if we think about our musical past and think about growing up when there wasn't the internet, there wasn't Spotify or Pandora, you know, how did you find out about new music? I mean, I totally remember like passing tapes back to my friends or going, hey, did you hear about this new group that's, you know, out of Champaign, or, you know, Urbana, they came up and my friend heard them play and got their CD and gave it to me. And I got a dub tape of it. It's awesome. You got to check it out. And so it's interesting that that's how it used to happen. Now you just get exposed to so much.
Right.
And it really doesn't take any effort.
No, it doesn't. And that's, in a way, that's kind of sad. It's still how I'll keep in touch with some of my old friends. That just occasionally I'll be, hey, did you check out this blues artist? Like, I've been really into that this week. But it's a lot less frequent. And I think it, like you pointed out, you even need that anymore for a lot of people. It's just people, it's just media's in front of you all the time.
Right. Alan, as you just mentioned, I mean, I think there's good and there's bad, right? You gain something and you lose something. Mm-hmm. You gain access to all this music that you would never have found out about. But again, the flip side is not sitting around with your friends going, oh, have you heard this? Or, hey, you got to check this out. Or, hey, you've never heard of this band before, but you know, I know them. They're coming to the Metro in Chicago. Dude, just come. You're going to dig it.
Yeah.
You don't do that anymore. So yeah, there's good and bad. And on that note of ennui, I think that's a good place for us to end our conversation.
Okay.
Corey, at the end of every episode, I always ask my guest, what is one tip that you would give to somebody to make today a little bit better?
Man, I don't know. Go outside. Go for a walk. Stop looking at a computer.
I love it. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Corey, thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
As always, thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links to the topics in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcasting services. This episode, like all others, is brought to you by our regulars over at Patreon. If you'd like to be one of the people with your own spot at the bar, we'd love to have you. Visit patreon.com/B3 and become a regular today. Want to get in on the conversation? Easy. Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar, and we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
That was awesome. You're like, I don't know what's wrong. I can still hear. And then it just cut off. The universe was like, ha ha.